The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Matt.
Hi, my name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic. Atlanta Group is my home group. My sobriety date is April 10, 2013, and I have a sponsor. His name is Jay. He's here somewhere, I think. I'm incredibly scared to be here doing this. I'm unbelievably frightened right now, and even though in theory I understand that everybody here really kind of wants me to do well and that this is a positive thing for me, I still have a pretty unbearable sense of self-consciousness doing this, which I think is very indicative of an alcoholic mindset, if that makes sense. That being said, the fact that I'm here, I showed up on time, and I'm going through with this despite that nearly unbearable sense of self-consciousness is evidence that this program works and that I've learned something here. And if there's one thing that I can say I've learned through Alcoholics Anonymous, it's how to like look at something that I'm afraid of and kind of walk through it. So if you're new here, I understand it's very scary. I am very scared, if I need to say that again. but I am here. And more importantly, before I got here, a friend of mine reminded me of something that this really isn't about me. This isn't about whether I impress anybody or articulate myself or am very witty. This is about carrying a message. The most important message that I have ever received in my life. So please pay no attention to me. just get what this is about. Okay. That being said, I'm from Manhattan. I grew up here. Usually when I say that to people, they respond like, "Wow, what was that like?" And I don't know. I don't know what it was like to grow up anywhere else. So this is it for me. It's what I got. I think the assumption is that growing up here, you know, I'm exposed to things early, and it's like a you know, really intense, childhood, you know, and you're supposed to be very precocious and try things really young, and that is probably true, but I think you could do that anywhere, you know. I think that is truly circumstantial, but I will say that. Being exposed to things early, I'm actually grateful for that, because I believe it led me to a solution faster for a problem that I was going to have to deal with at one point, whether I took my first drink at 12 or whether I took it at 30. I was going to end up here. I actually went to preschool here. If that that's like a really easy punchline to make, but there's a lot of them. But I did go to preschool in this building. I could leave at that. I mean, I feel like the message is delivered, but growing up, let me continue where I was. I did start drinking, and drugs are a huge part of my story, and I started drugs very young, but I started drinking a very young age, but I don't believe that any kind of, you know, childhood circumstance is what made me an alcoholic. I think the condition, you know, circumstances in my life may lead me to take a drink. They might like allow me to create reasons for myself to drink. But what makes me an alcoholic is that once I have that drink, I don't stop drinking, and that's something I had to learn repeatedly, and in very difficult ways. Yeah, that's the truth. I'm an alcoholic because as soon as I have the first drink, it's a problem. It's a big problem. I'm not this charming when I drink. I don't really need, you know, the story is kind of, you know, again, there are a lot of circumstances that led to me coming to these rooms, this room in particular. My mom brought me here when I was a little kid, but I mentioned that before. The solution presented here is definitely the thing I was looking for my whole life in a bottle or in whatever form. The values that are in the big book and that we teach here are values that I always wanted to embody. The person described in the big book that you can become is the person I really always wanted to be. And I always wanted to be altruistic and heroic in my own way. I always wanted to be kind of an outlaw, and I thought that was something that went with drinking and the kind of life I led before. But I realized, like, all the things that I kind of wanted to embody, a certain kind of rebelliousness, which I mistook for you know, what I assume was strength. They're all things you kind of get to be once you start this program. I think learning how to deal with fear, you know, through practicing these steps and through work with a sponsor, has led me to really kind of like live the actual hero story I always wanted to. Since I was a child, to not be the subject of fear of needing to please people, of needing to make sure everybody liked me at every minute. I only learned that, you know, how to be that way once I came into these rooms. So I guess I haven't spoken too much about my actual story. I drank a lot for a lot of years. It's the main part. I always thought that, you know, anger and volatility and stubbornness were qualities that like visionary people had, and that I was, as a great mind and as a great artist, I was entitled to be volatile and angry and irresponsible and, you know, and self-centered because I had so much to offer. But there's a big irony in that, because I was if there's one theme that I can really string through my life, it's this intense sensation of self-loathing. So I don't understand why I put it together that if I hated myself so much, people really needed to hear what I have to say. You know, kind of take that for what it is. I'm sorry. I kind of lost myself. How are you? My sponsor also told me to make sure I'm speaking to the newcomer. So, I've been sober for about 9.5 months, and you know, and I'm terrified to be here, but again, I am. I mean, they really like kind of brought me up to the major leagues fast, I think, when it comes to speaking, but I appreciate that. Stay here, and please find a sponsor. Please do these steps. This is where you want to be. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Alexis.
Wow. Hi, I'm Alexis. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 8th, 2009. I'm a member of the Atlantic Group. My sponsor is Devra. She has a sponsor. I'm currently practicing the steps. Thank you so much. Thank you to Hannah for asking me to speak. Thank you, Peggy, for Atlantic Group. Wow. It's funny. I was talking with my sponsor, and I was saying that I was going to not speak about like my experience. I'm like, I really want to focus. I did things wrong for so long on recovery. And she's like, no, that's not how it works. I mean, we share our experience, strength, and hope. So in that being said, I'll cut to the chase. I only have 10 minutes. You heard when my sobriety date was, and I started that count when I was 37. So I've been doing things my way for a long time. My first real consequence, I started drinking very, very young, was in high school. I went freshman year, I was in a private school, I went away to rehab. And you know, most people are enjoying being freshmen, and I went to rehab. And I spent that entire time at rehab talking about my family. I just made it an Al-Anon adventure. And but as manipulative as I was, you know, I was already pretty sophisticated with my disease, you know, and they felt sorry for me. They said, yeah, man, if I had your family too. So I left there, and like I said, I really do, I want to focus on the recovery part, but I have a lot to say here about just self-will really does avail us nothing. So I came home. I was the type of person where I was able to do things and accomplish some things, but there were always consequences. And I know that sounds like a contradiction, but it's the truth. Like I would get in a car with buddies at a party, and then 15 minutes later, there'd be almost a fatal car crash that I was a part of, breaking my nose, my cheekbone, my hand. The whole time, you know, crying, and really, you know, people are like, why are you crying? Like, parents are going to kill me. My parents are going to kill me. And then it's like, you know, you're back at school, and then you're, you know, falling off the balcony at somebody else's party, almost breaking your neck. And just like, yeah, it's how we roll. You know, we work hard, we play hard. But I don't know how hard I was working, but I thought I was. I did. I felt a very bizarre sense of entitlement. And people like to say, oh, when I was a kid, I felt different. I mean, it definitely always felt different. I had unbelievable fear. I always felt like this impending gloom, like something very bad was going to happen. My drinking was blackout drinking. It was intense. It was hard. But the abnormal thing is that I would say, wow, you know, I took a trip out to the West Coast. People have heard me share this. It was my summer going into eighth grade. And this is backtracking a little bit, but really quick, I want to share this because it's just not normal. We went over to Tijuana, got some tequila. I came back home to my best friend's house. We drank the entire bottle. I drank the worm, you know. I don't even know what that means. Like, so gross. Drink the worm. We were so young. You know. And then I went to a party, and we were doing some other things, and I fell. I hit my head. I remember getting on the plane so hungover, and I just, like, really, and it's as cliche as this is, guys, I'm going to say this, I felt like I had arrived, because that sensation that I felt, that, like, warm sensation that I could be anybody that I was a part of, that I felt, like, really, really plugged in. And again, I'll never, ever talk from the podium and say that there weren't consequences. Some people share, and this is just my experience, strength, and hope. There are always consequences for me. I tried to do some controlled drinking. I did that in high school. I saw a therapist. He asked me not to drink for X amount of months. I was able to do that, and then I was off to the races again. Went to college, did the same thing. I really realized that something was very, very wrong, that when I did drink, I would usually black out. You know, really, really horrific stuff would happen. I was bouncing back and forth from my college to my parents' home in northern New Jersey. I started doing something else for a living that was kind of intense, you know what I mean? But again, that doesn't make me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is the allergy of the body and the, you know, obsessive, you know, mind that, you know, that's all I could think about, you know, no matter what I was doing, like, when am I going to get the next drink? So, in that being said, I went to college. I ended up doing something else for a living. I ended up getting married, and it was okay to an extent. I was able to pull off certain things until I wasn't. I ended up getting divorced when I was 32, and I really came back into the city and again felt I had arrived on a different level. Different substances were involved. I was with a different group of people, but it brought me down really quickly. And I was seeing two different therapists, and they both said to me, you know, you're really, really sick. So I'd bounce from one to the other because I didn't like what one was saying. So I'd go to the other, and the other would piss me off, excuse me, and I'd go to the other, and I'd bounce back and forth. But one of them said to me, just broke me down one day and said all very truthful things to me, and it was really, really painful. So I started counting days at Perry Street. And, you know, I was able to do that. I had back, this is when I was about 32, I had a sponsor, almost 33, I guess, a sponsor from here, from AG. But I was unwilling. I wanted to see someone who was dating in London. I didn't want to listen. I picked up another substance, and I kept on going in and out on that substance. I was able to stop drinking almost 9 years ago, but I wasn't able to stay sober. And for me, they're one and the same. I won't focus too much on that, but this is my story. If I tell it any differently, I won't be telling my story. So even though the alcohol was able to be arrested, I wasn't able to stay sober. And that being said, I went for about 3.5 years, and there was, you know, some things. I don't really understand when people come up here and speak about like what they do for a living, what they have or what they don't have, because I know that this program, you have to be here no matter what. And it's like not just about no matter what with the drinking. It's about no matter what with like showing up for this. Like everybody, it's a horrific snowstorm tonight. And look at all these people in the room. You know, it's just such an honor to be of service tonight. And that being said, I was unwilling. I had a little bit of time. I picked up this other substance again. I ended up going from the city back to northern New Jersey. And then I hit a horrific bottom. A friend of mine suggested I see a doctor. Something was prescribed to me. And under a year, I was tried to kill myself 3 times. I ended up in ICU. I wasn't able to speak. They thought I had permanent brain damage. I went from being a person that people thought, you know, pretty highly of, regardless of my shenanigans. You know, they thought like, you know, hey, she's okay. She's an okay gal. But I wasn't. I couldn't even walk my sister's dog. I had trouble speaking. And, you know, these were the consequences. I had to hit a horrific, horrific bottom, basically lose everything and basically almost lose my life multiple times. But this is how totally insidious this disease is. I get basically my life given back to me, and I want to run out to the West Coast to pursue something that I was trying to pursue. And by the grace of God, I was surrounded by so many people on the West Coast that were so plugged into the program, and they said, you know, go home. Don't worry about this. Go home. Focus on your recovery. And I really did, and I was bent out of shape. I thought it was all about cash and I'm like, I don't get this. I'm not happy. You know what I mean? I don't feel like I have any cash and prizes. You know, I had zero gratitude. You know, I was alive, but I was so bitter. I was so full of all my character defects. And I'm not going to pretend I was very, very unwilling for a long time. And as insane, because this disease is insidious. You know, I've got this built-in forgetter. But by the grace of God, you know, I came around, was about 6 months back in New York. I came to Soho. Some people there said, stop, you know, start going to meetings. A different woman started to sponsor me. I stopped with her. I started with another. I owe a lot of these women amends. I was an animal. It wasn't cool. No, I'm not saying it's not fun. There's nothing funny about this. You know, my sponsors have, you know, basically saved my life, you know. And people say it's for fun and for free, but like when women are like taking time out of their lives to help all these other women, and but yet they'll pick up the phone for me, it's not a joke, you know. It's a gift. This is an altruistic program, but that means I need to reciprocate and I need to be practicing 12. So in that being said, I, by the grace of God, was sick enough and, you know, became willing enough to start to listen. I had a sponsor who basically told me to shut up. This is what you're going to do. This is how it's going to look. This is how it's going to work. And through that journey, I was open to getting involved with another woman that I'm currently working with, you know, reworking the steps. The biggest gift for me is practicing step 12 and being of service to another woman. So thank you.
Our main speaker tonight is James.
Hi, everyone. My name is James. I'm an alcoholic. and I am grateful every day that I've been sober since August 16th of 1995. That's 18. Crazy. My home group is the East Village Group. It's a place where I've done tons of service. In my time in sobriety, I've been blessed to have the chance to do tons of service at many different levels, and I'd like to touch on that throughout my qualification today, or this evening. I have to tell you, I brought props. My props are my Just for Today card. If you don't have one, they're wonderful things to have. A refrigerator magnet with the 12 steps on it, and they literally say, 1, I can't. 2, God can. 3, let God. 4, look within. 5, admit wrongs. 6, ready self for change. 7, seek God's help. 8, become willing. 9, make amends. 10, daily inventory. 11, pray and meditate. And 12, give it away. So we're going to give it away tonight. And I'm sure that as you are exchanging words with each other tonight and in every one of your meetings, you are helping each other stay sober and carry the message to other alcoholics. I'll go into a little bit of detail about myself. And yes, I have notes. I love letting the Spirit come through me. I have to confess that when I speak, I get really excited. I am definitely an AA cheerleader. And I had promised myself I would do the whole talk in my man voice, my serious voice. Unfortunately, that's not really how I am. I am someone who gets excited about things. I'm a big drunk, and I'm sober, but I'm not dead. So to just get started, it was snowing this morning when I woke up, and I must confess, I wished that I had levitated out of my lotus position and looked out the window and said, oh, look at the lovely blanket of whiteness before me, and my steps will go forward through the day. But no, I harumphed. I was not pleased. All I could think about was how I was going to be late. I'm currently doing grand jury service. I am the foreman of the grand jury, and pure luck, it's a blessing. And I didn't want to be late. I don't like to be late. I used to be late all the time. I was the guy who was late, 45 minutes late every day for work, guaranteed. My friends knew that I would always be 45 minutes late. If they wanted to meet me at 12, they would tell me to show up at 11:15. And I was just angry and frustrated. And all I could think about was that I was going to be late, and then my whole day would be ruined, and I would be late. But I'm not late anymore. That's not who I am. And then I stopped, and I had a moment to realize that I have changed, and that I have been changed by this program. And I could look at my feet as I did my little tiny steps through the snow and giggle and say, ooh, I'm taking little steps. And that's how we get sober. And then with my little steps, as I trudged the road to the subway, I was able to look up and appreciate the world around me. I got out of my head. I got out of that panic about being late. And I got to look for the good, look for what's around me. I got to see the beauty of Astoria's housing stock and the snow on it and the neat way that the white streets blended in with the paper whiteness of the sky. And I felt kind of small, and I could start my day over at any time. I remembered that, and I did. And it was okay, and I moved on. And I went to grand jury duty, and it was a good day. I'm delighted to be here. I got here dressed from the waist up and in jeans and construction boots on my way in, trudging through the snow. And I had another flashback just changing in the bathroom. It's not something I do very often in sobriety, but I am grateful that I was doing it for such a wonderful, worthy cause. I am an alcoholic. I identify as an alcoholic. I had a smidgen of drugs in my story. Alcohol is what got me here. Why am I an alcoholic? It's not because of my Irish heritage. It's not because, well, it might be that it's in my family. I certainly, when I first got sober, spent a lot of time thinking about my mother's family and how she grew up in Ireland with no light because her father had drunk all the money for the lamp, for oil. Or my father's sister, who was sober about 21 years. I didn't think about that. I started to think, why me? Woe is me. And then I stopped. I was very lucky that I got a wonderful sponsor when I had 31 days. I had wonderful people around me in the rooms who said, it doesn't matter why you're an alcoholic, you're here. And what's really important is how you're going to stay sober today. And that was one of the first little easy acronyms I learned. Honest, open, and willing. And I had to show up and learn to be here for myself and for others. And that's a challenge. I was definitely one of those kids that grew up in New York City. I was precocious. I lived in Queens till I was 12, and I live there now. But in the meantime, in the interim, I did live in Manhattan, and my dad lived in Manhattan, so that still made me cool. And I loved school, and I got a great scholarship to a wonderful school about 20 blocks from here. And bingo. Thanks very much. I, like many of us, I have a lot of squandered blessings in my life. However, I'm sober and I can recoup those blessings today. While I was at that school, what did I do? I had been drinking in eighth grade. At my eighth grade graduation party, I had 4 beers. Later that summer, I started taking a Tupperware container full of gin to the playground to meet my friends. I discovered alcohol very early. I drank vanilla extract in my parents' home. I substituted the gin with water, and then I was just basically drinking very watery gin. So then I just got rid of the bottle. I got to high school. I continued drinking. By that time, I was a good drinker. I was drinking 2 40 ounces of Bud every day after school. And because I was a nerd, I found the bad kids in my nerdy high school. And we sat in Central Park and drank our 40 ounces of Bud and did our homework. You only get that rebellious. And it's true. We really were doing homework. I was blessed, and you know, through the grace of God, I got caught drunk in my high school, and I got in trouble, but I didn't get kicked out. A lot of my friends got kicked out, so I was able to continue. Also, my junior year of high school, I decided to face the music and realize that I was gay in an all-boys Catholic school. So they were all teasing me. They were right. At the same time, I discovered the piano bars in the West Village. And this was the 80s. I had a lot of blazers with lots of shoulder pads. I had great floppy hair. And basically, I learned that if you fake it, you can make it. And if you act confident, people will give you what you want. And I got drunk every weekend, and then I got drunk after school. So I was getting drunk after school and then going out later into these gay piano bars. And that started a trend in my life, a pattern. And that continued for quite some time. I really thought I was very into the performing arts. I was convinced that I was going to be a star. I thought that, you know, at the open mic, I would be more like a Michael Bolton or a Luther Vandross. And don't get me wrong, I love to sing, and I've been told that I'm a decent singer. I kind of sounded like a drunken Cher impersonator without auto-tune. So it was an interesting experience. And by the time I got to college, it was clear that I knew I had a problem, and I kind of wore it as a badge of honor. I enjoyed being the angelic-faced rebel, and I enjoyed the double life, and I enjoyed having a secret, and you didn't know, and I was cool. And I went to college about 2 hours outside of New York, so I was able to come into New York all the time, continue my life in the piano bars. Then my drinking was really getting in the way because it was consistent and it happened in the morning. My first year in college, I drank a lot, a great deal. My second year in college, I made the dance company. I was very proud of myself. I was very proud. 5 days after auditioning, I made the dance company. And I was drunk and celebrating in the lobby of my dormitory that had wonderful floor-to-ceiling mirrors. And I was there in my pointy brass-toed boots doing pirouettes and decided that, you know, this was just a wonderful celebration, but I hurt myself and I had to drop out of the dance company. And that's just one, like, fantastic opportunity I had that I lost. A relatively minor one, but one that I'll always miss. My final year in college, I did get into the dance company again, and I had the chance to dance. Oh, God, I rhymed. I'm just hearing chorus line right now. I also started to have a lot of physical ailments my last year in college because of the drinking. A lot of stomach ailments. And I should say that my third year in college, I went to Paris, and I did an academic year there. And basically, you know, as a drunk, I picked the classes I liked. I had chosen to major in foreign languages. I took a lot of French. I went to France, stayed with a French family, drank red wine all the time. I woke up to red wine. I went to bed with red wine. I lived on the rez-de-chaussée level, the street level, so I could open the doors and jump out of my bedroom into the street, invite guests in through the window. It was an adventure. I lived in Paris for a year. I didn't make it to the Louvre. Hard to believe. I went to a lot of other museums, but I just didn't get there. I did get to the Louvre later on when I had 6 years of sobriety. And it was one of those little things I was always embarrassed about, and I pretended that I had gone. But, little things. So going back to that last year in college, I was having all these stomach ailments, serious pain. My housemates were telling me I had stomach cancer. I went to the on-campus medical service. They sent me to a specialist. The specialist looked at me, talked to me, asked me how much I drank. I lied, of course. You know, some wine with dinner, maybe some beer, a few mixed drinks. And the doctor was pretty astute. You know, he could tell I was lying. And he looked at me and said, well, what do you study? And I said, oh, foreign languages, French. I lived in France last year. And he just looked at me and said, well, you're not French. You can't drink like them. And I nodded and went about 2 weeks drinking beer only. And then I went back to my regular life and proceeded to be ill for about a year and a half more. So I had a little brief brush with some drugs. I had known bartenders since high school, so these bartenders would give me tabs. I had a job in a temp agency, not the best job, not the job I really should have had as someone who had come out of a good school and done reasonably well, but it was a job, and I didn't really have high aspirations. I still thought I was going to be a star, and I would be drunk and walk around the block and try to go on auditions, but I didn't go into the auditions. You have to go in to do things. You know, lesson from my drinking days, you have to be present for your life, even if it's just physically and you're tuned out mentally. That's the first step. Showing up is really key, and I couldn't do it. I was full of fear. And fear really is a theme that I've caught in my life. Fear of responsibility, fear of success, fear of opportunities, fear of other people, fear of economic insecurity, all of these wonderful things. What happened? My last year of drinking, I was always late for my job, at least 45 minutes. I always stayed late afterwards to make it up. I was always plagued with the best of intentions and the worst of actions. And very often in sobriety, especially in early sobriety, one of the biggest challenges for me was reconciling my head with my feet. I really thought I was trying to do good. I wanted to help you. And I was a sweet guy. I just ended up acting selfishly and thoughtlessly no matter what. And I drank. And you knew I drank, and I knew I drank, and everybody knew I drank. And then three friends of mine who weren't friends with each other ambushed me at a bar in June of 1995. And they said, "You're a mess." They were very loving about it. They said, "You're a mess. And, you know, we really, it hurts us to see you this way." And I had some wonderful choice words for them. And that was almost a trigger for me to drink more. And that started a two-month bumpy road of falling down drunk, rolling around on the floors of bars, making out with strangers I didn't know. I had always been one who financed my intoxication through the kindness of strangers. Basically, you kept me drunk and I gave you lots of attention. And that wasn't really working as much. The strangers were a lot less good looking. And the drinks they were buying me were not top shelf. And I started to fall down a lot. I had a few moments where I fell in the street and didn't really know what happened. One in particular that I do remember was falling down and having a cab screech to a halt in front of me, and the cab driver yelling at me, and me crawling off the side of out of the gutter into the sidewalk and wishing he had hit me. I went on a number of binges. Finally, after one five-day binge, I called into work sick again, opened a fresh bottle of Jim Beam, this was 7:30 in the morning, and proceeded to drink as much of it as I could, and then I was gone. I woke up that evening on the floor of my living room, and that night I went to a meeting. I skipped one part. I should just rewind a little bit. Around June, when those friends had intervened and I really kicked off things, I threw myself violently at a bartender who was very rebellious looking, kind of like old Bon Jovi with crazy hair and crazy eyes, like the kind of person that, you know, your parents wouldn't want you to bring home. He was sober, so we had our fun. And he said, "Hey, here's my number. If you ever think you have a problem with anything, feel free to give me a call." And I called him like about July, and said, I think I have a little problem. And he was very smooth and just said, hey, no problem. Let me show you how other people are staying sober. There's a meeting on Saturday at 2 o'clock at the 14th Street Workshop. Why don't you come on down? And so for several weeks, I desperately tried to make this meeting that I was always late for, usually drunk for, or hungover for. And that was my first taste of AA. But it opened the door. It gave me a meeting book. And so when I woke up August 15th, on the floor of my living room, I knew who I had to call. I knew where I had to go. And I went to the nearest meeting, and nobody talked to me. I stayed to help push some chairs around, and one older gentleman came up to me and said, hey, son, you know, it's a good idea to try to make 90 meetings in 90 days. Where are you going tomorrow? And he took the meeting book showed me some meetings that I could go to the next day. And that was the first real connection I had with a total stranger just showing me how this program works. And that's why it's important when you go to meetings outside of this wonderful room and you see that person who doesn't raise their hand and looks kind of new, maybe smells a little bit like booze, say hi. Tell them how it's worked for you. You don't have to go crazy, but show them what their options are. That wonderful sponsor I got at 31 Days, and I have a joke, which I now share with my sponsee. I always share it with all my sponsees, but right now I only have one. It's joking, saying, you have choices today. And it's true. But very often, you know, we can feel paralyzed by a situation, and we remind each other, well, you have choices today. You can move away. You can do this. You can do that. In sobriety, the world opened for me. My first several months of sobriety, I spent at midnight on Houston Street, and it was really funny getting there in my little preppy suits. But when I had 9 days there, I raised my hand and said I had 9 days. And two of the bartenders from the bars I used to go to turned around and said, oh my gosh, you made it. And one of them was somebody who had said to me, it just breaks my heart every time I see you in here. So suddenly, I was able to connect with people who were having full lives in recovery. And I was just shy of my 23rd birthday, so I was young. I was concerned about how I was going to live my life. What am I going to do to meet guys and not have, you know, transactional relationships? And I remember asking my sponsor this, and we were crossing the street at the time, and I said, how am I going to meet people? And there was someone crossing in the opposite direction, and he just yelled out, you're hot. And the other guy turned around, and then they chatted for a moment, and then they said goodbye, and he said, there, that's how. You're going to say hi. You show up, you say hello, you be yourself. And while I have only done that once, it did work. It was a great lesson, and it showed me that here in AA, we have a wonderful fellowship of people who will support each other and show each other how to have fun. I thought I needed alcohol to be fun, and I'm a lot more fun without alcohol. I mean, I was sitting there often just doing a budget on a cocktail napkin. Very lame. A lot has changed in sobriety. I am very lucky that I've been given a lot of opportunities through staying sober. I've made coffee. I've sponsored people who have stayed sober, a few who haven't. I've worked with other people for service sponsorship. I had the opportunity to do the steps. I don't recommend waiting. I waited till I had 4 years to do a fourth step. Don't postpone joy, people. Don't be frightened of what you hear about the steps. These are tools, and you might be fearful of the tool, but pick it up, look at it. See, it's not going to bite you. Meetings are tools. Our whole service structure is there to help us stay sober and help us learn to carry the message of AA. I started to change through the steps, through looking at my life, through showing up and realizing where I had wronged people. I had completely absented myself from my family's life, and the living amends I had to make as soon as I could was to really include my family in my life. And that was a blessing. That was an incredible gift. I got to spend time with my mother. I got to share my sobriety with her. She got to meet all these wonderful people who were also sober, also living their lives. She got to get in touch with her own history and alcoholism in her family and recognize how that had affected her. And then when I had about 12 years sober and she was dying, I was the person who was able to show up for her. I could be in the hospital. I could deal with the physicians. I could deal with the family members and speak to them directly, clearly, explaining very clearly that my mother was failing. I could deal with my stepfather and my brother and the physician who was talking to us about removing life support. I could hold my mother's hand and feel it grow cold and know that I was with her because I was sober. A lot has changed in my life since I was drinking. I've had the chance to show up for friends, for sponsees. I don't want to focus too much on disasters, but I worked in the World Trade Center, and I knew Father Michael Judge, who's deceased, and he was a proud member of AA. And after the 9/11, I was able to speak at a meeting in a slot where he had been booked, and it was just such a nice little gratitude moment for me. I've learned to show up in spite of myself when I don't want to. I've learned to use my tools. And in AA, you know, there are a lot of meetings. This is a wonderful meeting. I've had the opportunity to travel around and go to a lot of different meetings and be an AA tourist. And, you know, we all think that the place where we got sober is the best. And sometimes, you know, you travel to different places in America or other countries, and you're stunned at what they say or what they do or how they shake hands or hold hands or don't hold hands. But they're all sober. And I decided in 2003 I was going to move to Barcelona. And I did. Why? Because I could. Because I was sober. And I had the opportunity because I could look for opportunities. And I did, and I found great meetings, and I got involved with Intergroup for the local region, and we carried a little cell phone to answer calls for anybody who was visiting. I moved back to America. I've had great jobs. I'm lucky that I'm charged, I work in human resources, and I'm charged with a lot of decisions, and this is where I learned to make decisions. I'd like to just wrap up with our Just for Today quote. The first item on it, just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from two pests, hurry and indecision. So now we can take a deep breath, express our gratitude for our sobriety, and make a decision for what we're going to do the next day, the day after that, and how we're going to stay sober. Thank you very much for my sobriety.